Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Dean Cherney. Dean is the founder of StorePlay. StorePlay is an entire suite of digital retail technology for elevating in-store physical retail experiences. They provide customized music. They create custom scents and sounds and smells for factory recognition within stores. They also have an IQ service, which allows people to queue using QR codes for in-store activations and so much more. This was such an incredible interview. I didn't even know technology like this existed. They also have in-store retail display networks, both for the brands as well as an advertising channel for other brands that may want to advertise in these physical retail spaces. It's a great interview. I hope you enjoy. This is the E-Commerce Edge podcast with your host, Jason Greenwood. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Dean Cherney, and he is the founder of StorePlay. Welcome, Dean.
Hi, Jason. Lovely to be here.
Mate, it's so good to be here, and it's so cool to hear the Australian accent after nearly 30 years of living in New Zealand. And I had many clients and many business relationships with Aussies, and the Aussies and the Kiwis are definitely a lot more alike than, say, Aussies and Americans or Kiwis and Americans, or it's the Antipodean mindset from down there, down under. And I love Aussies. My sister, my brother-in-law, my two nephews, and my mom all live in Brisbane and have lived there for many years. So lots of Kiwis and Aussies, lots of Aussies in New Zealand. So it's awesome to hear a familiar accent today.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Yeah, look, we do a lot of work in New Zealand as well, obviously. New Zealand retailers work in Australia and Australian retailers work in New Zealand. Yeah, we've got probably about 10 or 15% of our business is based in New Zealand.
That's exciting. And I love what we're going to talk about today because it is a part of retail, omnichannel, what I would consider retail theater, retail experience, customer experience. What you're doing seems, at least from my perspective, and look, I don't play in your space, but it feels something so unique that I can't imagine you having that many competitors, maybe for certain elements of your business, but what you do as a full, what I would call retail technology experience package, it is super cool. As I started to do a tiny bit of background research, went to your website, saw all the components that you offer, it's pretty amazing. But how did you come to even be in this space? What's your journey?
Yeah. Look, it is pretty exciting. And I think you are right. Like the way we've tried to build StorePlay into a retail sensory experiential platform where we can work with every part of a retailer on that in-store experience, which is becoming, I think, really the key differentiator in bricks and mortar retailers, that in-store experience. It feels pretty exciting because there are elements that other companies do, but no one brings it all together in the way that we've tried to wrap it all up. And that's really been the vision that we've probably had for 2 or 3 years. And it's really nice because what you're seeing is more of a rebrand that's only been live now for probably 3 weeks. It was a bit more disparate, but the journey really all began, the Dean Cherney journey all began back in 1989. I was studying marketing in Melbourne at Monash University. I was DJing, and which I loved. And for my final year assignment, I decided to combine the two, an in-store music offering. So we had to present to a retailer, and my lecturer brought in someone from Portman's, who are an Australian retailer. I think they probably had close to 100 stores, what you would now call fast fashion, female. They still exist. They're part of the Just Group in Australia. And they brought someone in, and I literally had to present my idea of an in-store music business. And at the time, I didn't really realize there was anyone doing it. I thought I was this mad genius that had come up with this blue ocean idea. But there was another company out there that was doing it, as I did my research. And essentially, we're talking 1989 here, so it's all on cassette. And they literally had, I think it was 4 or 5 cassettes. There was a rock, a pop, an easy listening, maybe a jazz, and an instrumental. And then every retailer that was using their service, and they had tens of thousands of clients, got the same cassette. So if you were doing fashion and you wanted to be a pop, everyone got the same playlist. And obviously being cassette, it's not like you can shuffle a cassette either. You literally plus. You could literally go down High Street and you could go from one shop to the other. And if the cassettes happened to be in the same thing, you'd hear the same songs all in a row if you spent time in there. So I knew that there was a better way to help retailers differentiate their offering. My unique selling proposition when I did my assignment was really about how can we curate it and allow Portman's to be different from Sports Girl, to be different from Esprit, to Benetton at the time, and all of these different ones. So we were very much about, we will work with you on a soundtrack that is unique to your brand. And that really resonated. So I literally walked out of this presentation with my first client. I only got a pass for the assignment. It was a pretty average assignment. The concept was good, but the written words weren't great. And literally rolled into my company. And within days, I had my first client, and we were a go, mixing records onto cassette in my bedroom from my parents' house, then went out and got a few more clients, continued to build that. It was pretty slow going, but you had to mix it in real time back in 1989 on record, and you had to try and make sure the two sides of the cassette were even. Otherwise, you had all of this dead space at the end of one side if the programs were 2 minutes in late. Different. So it was a bit complicated and it was just slow. Then the advent of CD allowed us to streamline that. We could burn quicker. It was only one CD, is obviously only one side. So it allowed us to digitize it and scale a little bit because we could move quicker. And then in 2012, iOS had just started to happen and apps were starting to happen. And I went and got and built the first app for in-store music globally. So I went to the record labels overseas, got their approval that we could get this app added to the app store. And literally we rolled out in Australia, I think 3 months after Spotify launched in Australia. So we're really at the cutting edge. And the first one globally, which I was pretty proud of, we didn't have the funds at the time to get all the record label licensing globally, because that was quite expensive. So we just focused on Australia and New Zealand. And that really allowed us to scale. And that took us to being up to probably about 6,000 or 7,000 stores. And now we're in around 8,500 retail stores that we do music for and other retail technology, which we can touch on later.
Wow. What an incredible journey. So that obviously that first from 1990, from that school presentation, that was Marketing Melodies. And then you, 11 years ago, you must have decided, hey, music's great, but there's a whole lot more to this retail tech and retail consumer experience thing than just music. And so therefore, I need to have a brand that's perhaps a bigger umbrella to house this type of expansive technology. And that's where StorePlay, kind of the genesis of StorePlay, would have come from, right?
Yeah. So the genesis of StorePlay came when I started building tech. So what I recognized probably in around 2010, 11 was media players and all of this technology was starting to happen, and it was moving into the retail space. And when I was producing music on to cassette and CD, the value of my business was in my curation. But as technology was moving ahead, there were competitors that were coming into market that were tech-based solutions that were building a media player, and the licensing was starting to change. And I recognized that if I didn't build my own tech, I was going to get pushed out of the market because the retailers were going to want to move off cassette to CD, which most of them had at that point. And so that was fine. But the next iteration was digital. And if I didn't have anything digital, I didn't have an offering. I had to partner with other people. And I started doing that. I had a digital partner that I was working with. I just felt their platform is quite limited in what it, and it was a very closed platform. I had no understanding of it. And my goal was really, a lot of that equipment was quite expensive. And so some of those media players at the time, because they were so new, and you also have to think about it this time, a lot of it was also like, was dial up as well. We were just moving off dial up into these, so that transferring of data digitally was quite expensive. A lot of them just had encrypted CDs that were being used. But I recognized that it was expensive and these businesses would lock you in and on expensive hardware. So that these media players might cost $500 to $1,000 per store. So once you've made that investment, you weren't moving anywhere for 5 to 10 years or as long as that player was working. And so these companies weren't offering great music service, but they just had a player that these retailers needed. And so my goal when I thought about building an app was really to democratize that. So my goal was it's a bring your own device. iPods at the time, iPod touches at the time were $200. It was really cheap. So it allowed retailers to be able to just go and buy these. We became an Apple reseller, so we could sell them and set them up. But it also meant your mum and dad stores could also then have a digital solution that worked where they could control it, get curated music, and we could offer them the same kind of services that were being offered to enterprise kind of businesses. And our platform allowed you to upload ads if you wanted to do it. So you could create your own ads and in-store messaging and all of those kind of things. And it really was quite a game-changing piece of tech at the time. It was very much modeled around what the iPod Touch looked like and how the music player in there worked. And so it literally had the same kind of features, but it was just for business. And then you would subscribe to a channel and then you would get an updated playlist every month of an additional 3 hours that would add, and you'd just continually build the amount of music you had. And we built it as a SaaS platform as well. At the time, we were the only company in the world, and we're probably one of very few now, literally, where you can just go sign up, select the channel that you want, and then put your credit card in. And we also cover and manage public performance. So your public performance that you need to use in a retail or commercial environment. And I'm pretty confident we're the only company in Australia that can manage all of that in a one-stop shop. Some will allow you to subscribe to some music, but they won't let you do your royalties all in the same one. And it was really about just trying to make it easy. Our vision is to make it easy for our clients to supply music or in-store services to 1 billion customers a month. And that's our vision. And that's like our big, hairy, audacious goal that we're trying to go with. And that's what we're trying to work with. And then over time, we've added additional services to that. So we won a large retailer. Their existing supplier was doing digital signage for them. And they're like, "Well, you're going to do our music. We need you to do our digital signage." We now have over 200 stores that we do the digital signage for. So we literally just built that for them. And then they'd added that into the suites of services that we offer. We try and understand what our customers need and then build solutions that are going to help them deal with that.
And you're now up to, I think, 6 different modules that do different things. And one of the ones I saw there was that you've built a retail media network, and it feels like a natural expansion. If you're doing in-store signage for brands and they maybe have some spare space for signage and you could advertise something in their store that isn't a competitor to them, but they can make some money off of that dormant signage or that dormant space, then why wouldn't you? And you have a natural network that you can generate the network effects from for that. Hey, you build one piece of foundational tech, but it can be used in 2 or 3 different ways. Then why wouldn't you? Because now it's all software driven and it's all over the net anyway, when it's being populated and cycled through, why wouldn't you just create an interface where that can be managed by the retailer or by you on their behalf? And then you moved into the olfactory space, which I think is possibly one of the most fascinating pieces of retail tech that you now do, which is scent, right? These bespoke scents, yeah, brands. That to me seems like almost like new frontier. We all know if you go into a boho store, sometimes they'll have some nice candles burning and they have a certain smell, a certain scent. The olfactory scent, I think, is considered the oldest sense, the oldest human sense we have. And so it's one of the most primal senses we have in terms of emotional stimuli. And so we know that scent does things to us. We can remember back potentially to our first ever date and what our date maybe even smelled, because it's so primitive in our mind. But you've turned it into a science, an art and a science, and rolled that into retail tech as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's true. Like we wanted to become the only sensory retail experience company in the world that offered all of these things. And then the goal was to wrap it up with a retail media network. I mentioned earlier, like we used to, when I built StorePlay at the very start, and even when we used to do cassettes, like we used to have clients where we used to put ads in the middle of the cassette. So we were doing some version, a very basic version of a retail media network back in 1989. And I always had this vision that, God, wouldn't it be great if I actually had a program that I could offer businesses for free that was paid for by Coca-Cola. And then we put it into every mum and dad corner store or something where they can promote. It's been a logical part of that in-store environment for me. And it's something I've always innately understood. And maybe that comes down to my marketing degree and just the way of bringing all of that together. And so it really made sense. And one of the areas that we haven't touched on is all of this was going swimmingly well. And then COVID obviously hit. And so we're a retail business. We do everything we do is store-based. We're not an online company. We do everything online, but we don't deal with the e-commerce side of things. And it was like, God, like literally 70, 80% of our revenue just gone within a week. And so what's retail going to look like on the other side? And I remember talking to our customers. We paused all of our subscriptions. We really wanted to support them. I was running a pretty light team at the time, so we could still maintain everything and I didn't have to let anyone go, which was really great. But when I spoke to them about what do you think retail is going to look like on the other side, the two things I got from them were hand sanitizer and face masks. That was all they cared about on their thing. And I get all of that, but how are they going to get into the store? Because we've now got these density limits and you're not going to be able to let people all in at once. So people are going to have to either come back or queue or do whatever. And so we went about building in 3 months. We built what was called Social Queue at the time. We've now rebranded that to be Store Play IQ for intelligent queuing. And we essentially built a queue management platform that allowed retailers to be able to essentially digitize the butcher's ticket. And this was an idea that I'd had probably four years before COVID, which I pitched to Australia Post, because I used to hate going into the post office and having to pick up for that carded item if I wasn't home. And then they leave it there. And then you've got to wait in the queue and there's people that are having their passport photo taken or paying their bill. And you can spend 20 minutes in that queue. And I'm like, this is so frustrating. Imagine if I could just wander around the store, make an impulse purchase. And then they just tell me I don't need to have someone breathing down my neck. And I got a little bit up the ladder at Auspost, but nothing ultimately happened. So when COVID hit, I'm like, okay, I'm dusting off this game plan. And we picked up Kmart as part of that. We had the Vicinity Group offer our services to any of their tenants. And it really allowed us to really create a whole new business unit. And we felt really great about that, because not only was it great to the businesses, but with all the health concerns and the anxiety that people had in regard to COVID, especially in that first year or so, we know that we really allowed people to be able to stand at space and not have to deal with really tight queues and things like that. And that then iterated as well into how they came up with all of their click and collect pickups. So they have dark stores. They had 500 people rocking up a day to try and pick up goods. They didn't know when they were coming. They didn't know, they weren't set up for curbside, because most people came into store to do any form of click and collect prior to COVID. So we essentially built a queuing platform for them. So customers would say when they're coming, they'd bring the goods curbside in 20-minute blocks, and then the car would just rock up, they'd pop it in the boot. And so we allow them to do three times as many pickups an hour. Their NPS shot through the roof. Their eNPS, which is their employee net promoter score, shot up through the roof, because they were far more relaxed because they had control over the situation. And we're still doing that with them now. We did over 100,000 bookings in December with Kmart through the platform for click and collect and stuff. That allowed us to get into this other areas. That was initially the third bolt on. So we then had music, we had signage, and we had queuing. And then we were just thinking, what are the other areas? In my mind, we had sights, we had sound, and we had touch, because you have to do the queue kind of thing. And then it was like the logical other sense to go with is scent. And I'd met with someone a year earlier who had a scenting business who creates scents and works with a whole lot of really high-end luxury brands, working on scents, but not really in their retail side of things. And does, so he's just recently done a scent for Tourism Australia and does a lot of hotel work, but not at scale for retail. And so we got to speaking and yeah, so he's become our scent master. So he looks after that. And we had the brands and we've now got this ability to be able to cross sell it with ones where we're doing music or signage or queuing. And it really is wrapping it all up. So we've got now 4 of the 5 senses. The only one that we don't have is, but my stupid little catchphrase is, we do it all with taste.
And who knows, you may eventually get into some bespoke candies or something bespoke for each retail brand where they've got a distinct taste associated with their brand. Who knows what's next, right?
And look, we are working with quick service restaurants, QSRs. So obviously there's taste there. And there's some really interesting studies on the way music and obviously scenting can affect the taste of food. It all wraps up into that kind of thing. So once we've had those areas all together. And I think the beautiful thing that we've done as well is we've all put it in one admin. So that's not fully complete at this point, but the goal is that we'll all be in one admin. So you'll be able to log in as a retailer and you'll be able to see the music that's playing. You'll be able to see what's on the screen. You'll be able to see who's in the queue. You'll be able to see how much scenting fluid is left in the machine, whether it's online. And as you change your operating hours for Christmas or your particular trading, it all just goes through the one system instead of having 4 different platforms that you would have to work with. So it all just really streamlines it. So from an operational level, it makes it so much easier. And then we've wrapped all of that up in that retail media. So we can do advertising in the music, obviously between songs. We can push videos to screen. And obviously on a handheld device, if you're in a queue, if you think about it, if you're going into, say, Bunnings and you want to get paint and there's a queue in the paint line, you just scan a QR code and now you're free to wander around the store and we can then push an offer to you that might be related to paint. Here's an offer on paintbrush, an offer on this or something like that. So we've now got these various ways that we can push messaging to a customer, either directly on their device or through digital signage and the music. So it really makes sense. And an example of that in the real world is we do the queuing at the Australian Open that just finished.
Oh, the AO. Wow.
Yeah, an AO. So this was our 3rd year of doing it with them. I think they just reported that they had, for the first time ever, I think they had 1.1 million people through the doors of this tournament. And 10% of those people ended up in one of our queues, which is pretty cool. So if you have a grounds pass at the Australian Open, it allows you to get into any of the outside courts. And there's one show court, which is John Cain Arena, which doesn't have set seating. And so your ground pass can get you into that. If it's a big game or multiple big games that are on there and someone like a Nick Kyrgios, that's his favorite court. So when he's playing, that's where he wants to play. I think it's Andy Murray really likes it when he was on. So you could get thousands of people queuing to get in once that arena was full. And I think it only holds about 5,000 people. Prior to us getting involved 3 years ago, you literally stood in a line waiting for that seat to become available. And it would be one in, one out. And so when we started working with them 3 years ago, we essentially digitized all of that. So you scan a QR code. You can see what number you are in the queue. You can see you're 300 in the queue. You can just refresh it and see all of that. But now all of a sudden, you've got this opportunity to wander throughout the Australian Open, enjoy all the amenities, go sit and watch a game on the lawn, go drink at one of the activations, go grab a coffee, grab something to eat, buy merchandise, all of that. And so last year, we started incorporating some prompts within that queue, and percent of the people that were in that queue then went and spent money elsewhere. That's
just because they were free to do so and they didn't have to just stand there.
Yeah. And mind their spot. And this year we advanced that even more. We've now digitized pass outs for them and things like that. So you can select whether you're leaving the arena or just having a bio break and using the bathroom or grabbing a snack or something. So we've continued to really evolve it. And we're talking to one of the other Grand Slams at the moment about doing something which is pretty exciting. We haven't locked that in, but we could be doing some big work for one of them as well, which is really exciting. So that piece has really turned into and gathered a life of its own, the queuing piece.
So basically you're transforming retail spaces into enjoyable places to be, or at least wait to be, right? That's the reality of what we're talking about here. We're saying, look, there's certain negatives about the retail experience, but we're going to try to turn those negatives into a positive and make something which was memorable maybe in a negative way into memorable in a positive way. And I know that whenever I go into a retail store and I have an outstanding experience, it's such a standout, because most retail experiences are pretty similar and they're pretty boring. Like I will, maybe it's a factor that I'm a guy as well, perhaps, but I try to do as much shopping online as I possibly can. And I try to avoid physical retail like the plague. But my wife, on the other hand, she enjoys physical retail. Maybe she doesn't enjoy grocery stores, but she enjoys wandering the stores and seeing what fashion might be in there, whatever the case may be, or looking at shoes, because you got to have them fit and all that sort of stuff. We all have our different take on retail. But it sounds like whatever that retail experience is, you help to elevate that to something that's positively memorable for the customer.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, that's exactly what we're trying to do with retail. And I think the stats are really interesting. 80% businesses are still doing, is happening in the physical store. That's where most of the transactions are happening. So when COVID hits and all of that, I think retailers really rinsed and really optimized their online offering. And obviously there's always work to do and they can incrementally do it. But I think there was a fundamental step change in how that improved through COVID, because if you wanted to survive, you needed to be better at it. And now it's pretty exciting that the focus has turned on to retailer, in-store retail and that physical retail. And I was at NRF in New York a couple of weeks ago, which is the big retail trade show. And there's such a buzz on it. Everyone knows that's where the work needs to be done. And that's where they're really going to win the hearts and minds of their customers. And I've got two daughters. My eldest is 12. Physical shop, physical in-store experience for her is the most important thing. If you look at the brands that are crushing it at the moment, a lot of them might be in the beauty space. It's such an experience when you go into those stores, everything from the scenting to the signage, to the music, to the fact that you can get a makeover, that you can do this, you can do that, you can touch, you can feel it, and all of those kind of things.
Virtual makeup and virtual try-ons and virtual everything.
Yeah, but even not virtual, like real life, go and get your face put on or trial this and see what it looks like. And a makeup artist will do this for you. And it's incredible.
The Sephora experience.
It's Mecca probably here in Australia, but that's the ideal weekend for my daughter, is to go to a shopping center and hang out at this cosmetic store or a cosmetic store and engage with it. And I think it just shows that when it's done well, there's this great opportunity for retailers to be able to create these memorable experiences. It doesn't need to be waiting in a line. It doesn't need to be just a bland experience. Scenting has such powerful recollection. It's the strongest of all the senses, gets 80% recollection. Everyone knows about Abercrombie and Fitch. You talk about scenting and they go, oh yeah, it used to stink and whatever, but they were the number one selling fragrance for males in their target market for years. How cool is that? That your customers are wearing your scent out on date, and that's what they want to do. Like, it's one, you can't buy that kind of branding, and it might have been over the top, but it's still quite incredible what they've managed to achieve. And I think brands can do it in their own way. They mightn't want to do it as full on as what they did it. We can create candles that allow you to take that scent home, so your customer has your brand in their home. So then every time they walk past one of your stores and they smell it, they're 100% going to know that it's you. And that's going to drive them into store and it's going to drive sales. And so we're trying to tap into all of these things. On the audio side of things, we want to be able to create the best playlists. We're using, I'm loath to use the term Gen AI because I feel it's a little bit overworked, but we're using machine learning that allows each store in a retail environment to play music that is particular to that store based on the brand archetype and that store demographic and the time of the day and the weather for that store. So you think about a store in Queensland, in Australia, where it's generally warm, it's going to be very different to Melbourne in winter when it could be pouring with rain. So would you be playing the same music? Is it going to be the same vibe in those two stores? Probably not. Same customer, maybe even different clothing, but the music should be different. It should be targeting the same customer. And so we're building technology that allows that to happen. And then can also, through this retail media network, promote different items, because you probably don't want to be selling summer shirts in Melbourne in winter, but it's probably an item that you might be promoting up north where it's warmer. So there's those kind of things. And then we've connected the music and the audio. So what we also do is we can create essentially a completely synchronized experience. So we can have video ads that play between our music. So they play and then they cut into the digital signage. So you get the audio and video playing synchronously through the store, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So you're aligning those so that effectively the audio and the video are aligned, which makes sense. Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
Yeah, most retailers just use silent video and audio, and they're not connected. So we're built this way that we can do this and create synchronous audio video playback, which again is pretty cutting edge. We don't know anyone that's doing it. There's companies that will break into the middle of a song with a video, but that's the worst of experiences, because you're there singing to your Taylor Swift song and then all of a sudden halfway through the chorus, something breaks in. Ours works beautifully because we're putting the videos at the end of the song and changing how that operates. So we feel like we're doing some really cutting edge stuff that really will elevate that experience. And it's like, I've never been more excited about the business, to be honest, as you can hear me, because I keep ranting on about it.
And it is exciting when we think about the fact that you brought up some of those statistics. And even as somebody who's a pretty hardcore digital guy, even I have been forced to admit on more than one occasion that, hey, 70 to 80% of all retail is still done in physical stores. And it is likely to continue to be done in physical stores for many more years to come. So when we think we've done this amazing job of building these incredible e-commerce experiences, well, that may be true to a degree, but the reality is when omnichannel retailers neglect the physical retail experience, they're actually neglecting the lion's share of their business. They're not neglecting something small. They're neglecting something hugely significant. And if they can, I don't know if you're, there's so much incredible retail tech coming out of Australia right now. If we, I don't know if you're in contact with Simon or Molnar over at Flagship or some of the other, there are some incredible retail tech vendors that are building literally on the global stage stuff that is so unique that it could almost only come from Australia. And it really is amazing how I remember what COVID felt like for me and in the verticals I play in and with the types of clients I have with e-commerce. The brakes got slammed on every single project at the beginning of COVID. And then literally within a month or two later, everybody realized, oh my God, we actually have to have the most cutting edge e-commerce experience, because like almost everything is shifting that direction for the foreseeable future. And I think during that time, a lot of retailers did neglect the retail experience. And maybe they did pull back the spend. Maybe they did pull back the investment in those spaces. And they pulled back the investment on experiential retail or retail theater. And they started to forget all of the psychological levers and triggers that they had to work with in the physical space that they don't get to use and leverage online. And it feels like it's all swung back around the other direction again. And they're going, we shot our wad, so to speak, during COVID on all these digital initiatives. But man, we really need to put some serious investment into our store spaces, considering they drive the lion's share of our revenue, even if we're an omni retailer.
I think you're 100% right. And I think when COVID hit, I remember reading articles, it's the death of retail, physical retail. Everything's going to move online. It's going to be 50-50 and almost parity
soon.
Like they were the kind of things, all the closures, like it's not that. And I think even those digital first retailers have realized that they need to have some physical presence to be able to create a long lasting relationship and connection with their customer. That's where that true connection is built that then transfers online and where they might make that other 20%. But I received an email yesterday, I think, or the day before, I think it was Retail Oasis. They were sharing some information. They're an insights business within Australia. And I think people's preference for shopping has actually increased from last year to this year in physical stores. So I think it went up from 75% to 79% or something like that, where their preference to shop is. And it really is turning around. I think it's actually because retail are now investing in making better in-store experience, whether it might be mobile checkout or even contactless checkout and all of these things, it's really bringing life back into the retail environment. And customers are really connecting with that. And I think it's only going to get more and more. Those numbers are only going to improve. I don't think e-com heads, I'm not saying that, but I really feel that experiential retail opportunity is just going to continue to grow and grow.
I think it mirrors what we saw in regards to physical conferences and meetups and groups. I remember, and even as a hardcore digital guy, I was never one of those people that said retail was dead and it's going to get to 50-50. I said, look, we're probably going to experience a bump that's unpredictable of how big or how long this bump is going to be, but we're probably going to return back to the mean of the up and to the right. That trajectory is still up and to the right in terms of digital penetration. But I knew that human behavior is exceptionally hard to change, where there are certain behaviors that are literally hardwired into our biology that are just so hard. I mean, we're tribal. Human beings are tribal, right? And you don't get the tribal fix when you shop online. We know that you get the tribal fix when you go to a mall. There's 100,000 other human beings around. Just the buzz, the energy, the physical, palpable energy of being in a physical space. It's why going to a movie theater, despite the fact that you might have a $50,000 home theater at home, it's why those people still go to see movies in the movie theater, because it's a collective human experience. It's not just because what's on the screen is better there than it is at your home theater, because it's oftentimes not. And so I think it's really interesting when we start thinking in the context of I heard the same things being said about physical conferences, and especially digitally focused, e-commerce focused conferences. At the beginning, people were saying, we're never going to do an in-person conference again. All these conference companies are going to go out of business. We've figured out how to do virtual conferences really well. So that's how everything's going to go. And that's how it's all going to stay. And I'm thinking to myself, really? I'm thinking one of the highlights of my year is going and breaking bread and literally sitting down and having a beer with my industry mates at a conference where it's one of maybe only two or three times a year, we're all in the same place at the same time, talking shop, swapping ideas, swapping stories, sitting down and sharing drinks. I thought to myself, how could you ever think that a virtual beer is going to replace a physical beer? It's ridiculous, right?
Yeah. And we're social beings. And I think shopping is often social, especially for a younger generation. Conferences, you can go and sit there and you can see someone on a virtual conference and do all of that. But probably just as much gold comes from literally when you're sitting at the bar having a chat to someone. And none of that social side of things and those little connections are able to take place if everything is being done online. And it 100% has its purposes. If there's someone speaking and I can't obviously be there, it's better to be able to see that person than not and experience it. And if I want something, I might go online and get it. If I can go into an environment where I can try it on, and maybe I'm a little bit more old school, a bit like you, I like to try it on, see that it fits and do all of that. I can't be bothered then with the whole returns process and things like that, which is also really troublesome for retailers as well. I don't think they've mastered that piece as well. That in-store environment is just a far better place to be able to do that. For me, it turns out to be quicker and easier.
And we look at brands like Culture Kings, and we look at some of the other big retail brands, the ones, the Sephora's, the Mecca's, the ones that are known for their retail experience. They are leaders in their category. When we think of Culture Kings and the fact that they have DJs and they have visiting sports stars and all that sort of stuff. And you can see queues literally around the corner, around the block to get into a Culture Kings store because of the in-store experience. They're probably more known for the in-store experience than they are for the physical products that they actually sell. Of course, we know they sell surf and streetwear and all that sort of stuff, but they're anecdotally known for the in-store experiences that they create that draw people through the doors in the first place. And all of these great retailers, like when we think of the truly great retailers that are leaving their mark on the retail landscape, all of them create unique and memorable positive experiences for their customers, don't they?
And I think like when you look at the Culture Kings example is great. Like the product they're selling is available in a multitude of retailers, but it's the retail experience that they do. And that actually ties in to the sixth of the parts of the business, which is what we've set up is Store Play Activate, which is about in-store activations and being able to do those things, whether it be DJs or in-store appearances, and how we can align music, which is really so much, you can see it as a music symbol behind me at the heart of what we do, the genesis of where this business began, and how we can connect record labels, artists with brands and help elevate that. We work with Accent Group and G Flip, who smashed it in the Hottest 100. This year, Platypus did an event with her. She did in-store appearances. We did music in the lead up for it, created her playlist in store and did all of those kind of things. They had thousands of people that appeared. Like, that's how a brand manages to build themselves into something that is not just a business or a store that becomes a lifestyle brand and becomes part of the culture of their customer. And they, Accent Group, do it really well. They do lots of those kind of initiatives in store and leverage artists that they think represent the brands that they represent. And they're continually doing those kind of things. And it's fantastic. Like, why wouldn't you? And that's why it's such a successful business.
You're already paying rent. Might as well maximize what happens in the store floor when you're doing it, right? And what, you know, if we look out over the next couple months or so, what's next for you guys? Is there another module, so to speak, that you want to add on? Or what kind of enhancements do you want to bring to your services over the next 12, 18 months? What's next on your radar?
Look, the next 6 months is really about consolidation of it all. We've literally only just launched this in the last couple of weeks, and really bringing it all together completely in that one admin is really our goal, because I think that's partly where the superpower is. I think while we have the retail media set up, really getting some great case studies. So it's really about the utilization of it by our clients. For me, I think we've really built something that's quite special here that is really resonating. In the US, it was incredible how many retailers we spoke to that were like, we've never seen this before. Not all packaged together. We've seen parts of it. And so now it's about really trying to just bed it down, get those case studies happening that we can then share, and then actually just prove how it works. For me, that's where the proof is. It's great to have all of this stuff that we've built and our clients go, yep, we love it, but we now want to get the data. We want to be able to see and be able to track POS data to show that we can improve sales in this area and do that. There's this generative AI where we're doing different playlists for different stores based on time of the day and all of those kind of things. We're partly through that. That's not fully complete. So there's lots of little bits that we need to just tie up. It all works together. It all does what it does, but we really need to now just homogenize it and bring it in to that singular one. Like, our theme for this quarter and probably for next is about one. And it's really about one platform, one admin, and doing those kind of things. So yeah, that's what we're thinking at this point. And then I'm not sure, we'll see where we go with that, whether there's going to be another module that we add to it. I reckon six probably covers most of what we want, but some of them might expand. Look, we're always looking at different things. We're looking at how we can help retailers with shrinkage and things like that, which has become a real issue. And we think we've got ideas to be able to solve that through the way StorePlay IQ with our booking platform sort of works, where you could connect with a team member and get them to unlock a lock cabinet or something like that, and try and create elegant ways of doing things like that. So we've got ideas, and it will also come through focus groups with clients. I'm a bit of a believer in that that I think it was Ford said, if I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. And I think Jobs had something similar in regard to that. So we want to get feedback from our clients in regard to what are their pain points and think about how we can solve those. But at the same time, I also recognize that we're looking across so many different industries, and I'm such a lover of tech and those kind of things that I can probably spot opportunities even maybe before my customers and my retail clients can see it. Even with IQ or Social Q, it was called, my customers weren't really focused on how they were going to deal with customers. Like, none of them said that was going to be a pain point for them, but it was.
And then instantly overnight it was, right?
Or they, I could see it. And so if I would have done what they would have wanted, you know, we'd be left with a whole lot of hand sanitizer and face masks. But instead, it's like, I really back this because I know this is going to be a problem. I didn't know how long it was going to last, but I knew that once I'd built it, I could iterate it into something and we would be able to then grow as our customers used it. And then we had that opportunity. Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see where it is. But for me, it's really just about bedding it all down over the next 3 to 6 months and really just making it really cohesive.
Love it, man. This has been a fantastic conversation. I've learned so much. I don't play as much in the digital retail space or retail tech space, but I could see opportunities in the future with integrations with things like Klaviyo and making sure that or other online marketing and MarTech platforms integrating with your platform so that we have harmonized campaigns going out through our digital channels and our physical channels at the same time so that they're completely integrated together and triggered off the same core systems so that we can track conversions and across channels. And there's probably a whole lot of opportunity to integrate your technology into existing online or digital marketing technology and other parts of the operational stack as well. I think there's probably integrations in your future, even with CRMs and help desks and things where, okay, I'm going to trigger off a return in store. So now I need to know that this is happening in a reverse logistics way into a store. There's probably a million different things you could pursue, but it's probably, I would imagine that for you, the hardest thing is deciding what to say no to, not deciding what to say yes to, or maybe it's the other way around. But either way, there's a million things you could pursue, but being selective is the most important part.
Yeah, I'm not very good at that, to be honest. So yeah, look, and look, there are integrations that are already afoot. When you think about joining, say, the paint queue, we can either have an offer that might be just owned by a brand that anyone in the paint queue does it. But at the same time, we know we have data on a customer before the retailer even knows that customer is in the store because they've joined our queue. They might walk out and never even interact with that retailer, and the retailer would never know. But because they're in our queue, we can send that through to their CRM, and then they can go, oh, Dean's in the queue at this store and he was looking at this online. Why don't we send him an offer for this product that was in his abandoned cart or something like that? So we see the data that we're getting as being a massive play for the retailer, especially through the queuing platform. And I didn't touch on it, but we recognized as well that same day delivery isn't probably being done as well across the board in Australia as it could be. So through our click and collect booking, we've now done a deal with Uber and DoorDash. So a retailer can literally turn that on. And instead of you going in and picking up your click and collect, you can actually just book an Uber directly through our system to pick it up for you. So any retailer that is using our technology can essentially offer express delivery, because if you pick and pack in 10 minutes and send that message, that customer then has the ability to get that delivered to them express. That's a one-to-one. The customer pays for the convenience. The retailer still makes full margin on it. It essentially just swaps out you to pick it up and puts the delivery driver in there. And it has QR code and all of that. So all of those kind of things. And we can do it with the alcohol. We can do it with pharmacy as well. So again, we're trying to take and disrupt little things like that and offer convenience to customers where they mightn't otherwise have it. If a retailer is only delivering from warehouse and that warehouse is in Australia, if you're a WA customer, it could take you 7 days to get a delivery. Yeah. If they do a click and collect from the store, they can get it within an hour. It's completely changed how that business operates.
And with no extra load on them, like with no change to their existing operations, processes, cost structures, no direct deal needing to be done with them and Uber. It's an amazing service. Now, if we start thinking about how you make your money, like how do you charge retailers? You have a SaaS platform, which means I'm guessing there's some kind of subscription there, but then you also offer some value add services plus advertising. There's a whole lot of kind of moving parts to this model. And so I'm guessing that there's moving parts to how a client gets billed as well. Number of locations, I'm guessing number of modules that they use. I'm guessing there's a whole lot to it.
It's essentially a subscription. It's essentially a subscription platform. When we're talking about IQ and text messages, there's a text message that goes there. Sellers are allowed to add any in-store messaging they want to their system, obviously at no cost. It's their retail environment to do whatever. And then as we funnel in advertising, it just depends on what that might be and the breakup between the brand, if we're using a third party to bring that in and all of those kind of things. So that wouldn't cost the retailer. That would actually probably, if anything, only allow the retailer to make more money through their platform. So it's a pretty simple model, in all honesty. And like I said earlier on, all of this is available for a single store retailer. They can sign up for pretty much all of this. And then at the same time, we do Telstra and Optus and brands like that and the Just Group and things like that. So I said it earlier and I stand by it. It was really, in my mind, in part about trying to democratize retail and really make it easier for smaller retailers who don't have the capacity to potentially be able to do a DoorDash deal. They don't have the devs to be able to do it through our platform. Bang, you've got express delivery. You can do it really easy. They can do sinting. They can do all of these things through one platform and they can compete with the big players. They can compete with an Amazon who's offering next day, 2-hour delivery kind of scenarios because they can do it through click and collect. Mightn't be the way they were thinking about it, but it's a way of doing it nonetheless.
100%, 100% agree. Dean, this has been a fabulous conversation. I so appreciate your time. An hour has absolutely flown by and I absolutely love this.
It has.
Now, you've set my mind spinning about all these amazing things we can do with physical retail that we cannot do online as much as we would love to. But this is the point where I get to turn over the microphone to you. I get to let you ask me one question. Any question you like can be personal or professional. So Dean Cherney from StorePlay, what is your question for me today?
Golly gosh, Jason, I didn't know that was coming. Maybe I didn't read.
I'd love to keep you guessing.
Okay. So I think my question, trying to follow on from where we are, is what do you think the biggest disruption to physical retail will be in the next 12 months?
Wow. Yeah. Look, you're probably closer to this than even I am, but I think I really do think that physical retail B2B is ripe for probably even more disruption than B2C and D2C. And because I do so much work with B2B omnichannel retailers that are selling online, but they oftentimes will have physical retail locations or they'll have a warehouse with a will call location, where that's the equivalent in the B2B land of click and collect. They just call it will call, but it's effectively click and collect. I think the retail experience in B2B stores is really similar to B2B online e-commerce experiences are probably a decade behind B2C and D2C. I think physical retail for B2B is probably at least 10 years behind your B2C and D2C retail. And they don't have the concept of retail theater. They don't have the concept of retail experience. They don't really think of it through the same lens, experiential lens, as a D2C or a B2C retailer does. And I think that's a massive missed opportunity because they could really become super stickier in their customers' minds. Now, they're probably pretty sticky anyway because a lot of these B2B retailers, they maybe have a monopoly in their space or they're a preferred supplier for a certain product and all those sorts of things. But I think they could stand out more. And I think that they could create a sense of, instead of drudgery, oh, I've got to buy this for my job or my business, or I got to send this to the job site or whatever. A lot of these people that are coming into these B2B stores, they're doing it because they don't have a choice. They have to buy these things, right? But that doesn't mean that you can't stand out from a brand experience perspective just because those customers maybe have to buy through you. And in many cases, they might have two or three suppliers that they could get those things through.
two or three different wholesalers or distributors that they could get the goods through. And I think if you, because oftentimes when I go into these B2B experiences, and I've had this experience before, you get some grizzled old guy behind the counter and he doesn't really want to be there. He's the font of all knowledge about these products. And so you go up and you ask him questions. You say, well, I need this thing for this application or whatever. And you're, okay, I'll go to the back and I'll get this thing for you. But I think if we could create B2B retail experiences that were a lot more like B2C and D2C, where it's, no, this is a chance for us to paint our brand in a super positive, memorable light for our buyers, so that even if a new supplier comes along, they're unlikely to go to them because they actually enjoy doing business with us. Even though they have to, they enjoy doing business with us. So we're the first choice for this type of product. And I think that never really gets considered in the B2B world very much.
Yeah, it's interesting. We haven't played in that space much at all, but I'm thinking about various businesses in that space and my limited experience with them. And it very much is like that, an angry man behind the counter, not really wanting to serve you and almost making you regret asking any questions. And yeah, I think there definitely is a way. And there's some big businesses in that space too that have hundreds of stores.
Think of BNT, think of Steel & Tube, think of all these huge B2B retailers that in some cases they've got hundreds or thousands of stores, retail experiences, but they're for business customers. I just think there's just as much as there's online opportunity, I still think there's an incredible physical experiential opportunity there that they never think about. It never crosses their mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That's given me a whole new area to think about as well. Question.
I really appreciate the question. That was amazing. Yeah, I love that. That's absolutely amazing. Look, Dean, how do you like people to get a hold of you? I'll drop a link to your LinkedIn profile into the show notes. And of course, I'll link to your website. But how do you like people to reach out and have a conversation about what you do in physical retail?
Look, either of those work, or they can just email me at dean@storeplay.com.au. Happy to take those emails directly.
Wow. And do you work only in the ANZ region, or are you now delivering services globally or in North America at least as well?
No, we're delivering globally. The majority of our business is in SA, and we're pushing into the UK at the moment through one of our clients rolling out there. So we'll have 200 stores in the UK, hopefully very shortly. We've had a concerted effort and push into the US at the moment. So we're talking to some very large retailers over there about some of the Storeplay IQ stuff. There's been quite a bit of interest in scenting and music as we've brought it all together, which is why I was over at NRF this year, and we were in the innovation lab there last year. It feels like it's a bit of a longer sales cycle in the US, though. Obviously, some of them are far larger businesses with far more stakeholders. And so we've got to be a bit more patient there. But hopefully in the next 3 or 4 months, we'll have our first couple of US clients.
Amazing. The next time you're back in North America, if you ever pass through Mexico, you have to come and pay me a visit, and first round of margaritas are on me. And Dean, I've really enjoyed the conversation. I super appreciate it, and I can't wait to do it again soon, my friend.
Thanks very much, Jason. I really appreciate the time and the opportunity.
Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.